Hello, everyone. Right, I guess we'll get started. Okay, so my name is Alex O'Donnell. I work for MCS in the UK, and joining me is Charlie from Clifford Chance. So today is all about the customer view. So I'm going to give Charlie kind of 90% of the work, and I just get to do the demo and answer some tricky questions at the end. So yes, I've been working with Clifford Chance over this year in a number of beta programs that we've been working with them and the product group with SharePoint and also Exchange and other technologies. But as I said, today is going to be hopefully the good, the bad, the ugly. Nothing too ugly, I hope. If Charlie goes completely off script, I might wrestle the mic back from him. But I hope that being honest with you is useful and that we get the balance right between being optimistic and also realistic. So I'll join us again for the demo, and then hopefully afterwards we can have what I'm hoping is going to be a kind of a lively Q&A session on any of the above we've seen today. So without further ado, over to Charlie.
Thank you very much. My name is Charlie Winterbottom. I'm a solution architect from Clifford Chance. So as Alex says, I don't work for Microsoft. I see one of my colleagues in the audience as well. Thank you for coming to this session. I know it's getting towards the end of quite a long day. I think some people are possibly feeling slightly jaded after the party last night. So I thought I'd tell you a nice story about what we at Clifford Chance have done with SharePoint 2010. I'm one of the few people talking primarily about SharePoint 2010 at this conference.
Thank you. One gentleman over there.
I'll talk about what we've done. Alex is going to do a bit of a demo. We'll wrap up, talk a bit about what we are planning to do with 2013, because as Alex says, we've been involved in the technical adoption program for SharePoint and Exchange 2013. And then we'll have a bit of Q&A at the end, and hopefully what I say will resonate with some of you, and happy to answer any questions. And we may, I'm looking around, we may even have some product group people in the room who might be willing to answer some questions as well if any come up. So, this is what I'm going to talk about. I'll just say a very quick bit about Clifford Chance in case you haven't got no clue who we are. Clifford Chance is one of the world's largest global law firms. We have 35 offices in 25 countries. We're quite spread out, so we're headquartered in London in the UK. We have offices right across Europe, in New York and Washington, and Sao Paulo in the Americas, and all across Asia Pacific, including Australia. We're not massive in terms of number of employees compared to some places, so we have about 3,500 practicing lawyers. And about 6,000 employees in total worldwide. So the rest of those are in business services and IT, people like me. The firm is a partnership, so we have about 600 partners who effectively own the business, so that makes life interesting sometimes. And one point, which is every industry has its own particular jargon. If I start talking about matters, I mean projects. So lawyers work on matters. A matter is just a project. It's a bit of work that we do for a client, just to avoid any confusion. So, the enterprise content management challenge. I think enterprise content management is used to refer to an awful lot of things. For Clifford Chance, it really means primarily document management and email management. I've heard our business described effectively as a document shop. Our clients pay us to provide them with advice, which is typically packaged in written form, in documents, or in emails. We open about 20,000 new matters every year. We have about 25 million documents in our document management system, growing at about 500,000 a year. We have about 70 million emails filed in our primary email management system. And we think that's quite a lot of data. I know compared to some people it's not a lot of data, but given the number of people we have, I think it's a reasonable amount. And it means it is a challenge to manage it. Knowledge management is key to what we do. We have a curated collection of our key intellectual property. We do a reasonable job of, at the end of matters, doing a matter review process, pulling out the key points from that, packaging that up, summarizing it, storing it, tagging it. And we're moving that stuff into SharePoint from a bespoke system as we speak. That's part of what we're doing. But we know that people also refer back to work they've previously done. So search is key to us, people being able to find work they've done historically, seamless access to live and archived content. We have a bit of a culture, which is a challenge from an IT perspective, of keeping everything forever, and people expecting all their information to be available online. I'll talk a bit more about that later on. Increasing regulation is a challenge for us, both in terms of the regulations that apply directly to law firms, but also those that apply to our clients. So a lot of our clients are big financial institutions, and although the regulations and legislation maybe doesn't apply directly to Clifford Chance, because it applies to our clients, we have to treat information in the same way. And increasingly, our clients will come in and audit us and make sure and insist that we apply fairly rigorous controls around their confidential information that we store in our systems. So that's a challenge for us in terms of the way we manage content. And that feeds into client and customer expectations and demand. We have historically done a pretty good job of managing our data, documents, and email. And I know of at least a couple of cases where we've had clients on the phone saying, we've had a bit of a problem with our email system. Can you, Clifford Chance, go and find all the email that related to that piece of work and send it back to us? And generally, we're pretty good at doing that. And the same with documents. And that's been pretty good historically and continues, hopefully, with SharePoint to be pretty good. And then we have some challenges internally around consumerization. So it's not that long ago that Clifford Chance was still on Windows 2000, Office 2000. And that started to generate some fairly negative feeling within the business. And it's quite important for us to actually look to modernize some of our systems, provide people with more seamless access to their data across devices, mobile access, so iPads, everyone talks about, but it is a fact that a lot of our partners walk around with iPads and like to walk into client meetings with their iPads and put them down on the table and then can't actually access any of their work-related information on it. So that's been a bit of a challenge for us, and that's something that we've worked on doing. And I suspect that's common for a lot of you. The reality of big data in a law firm, that is not a staged photo. That's a real picture of a partner's desk in our office. There are some idiosyncrasies to what we do and the way people work. And that has influenced the way we've built our document management system on SharePoint. Our lawyers still love paper. Their business process is typically that they are managing large numbers of comments from multiple parties back into the version of the document that they are controlling. And despite the best efforts of various IT companies to come up with good ways of doing that on screen, they still like to print stuff out, mark it up by hand, scan it. So we're Xerox's best friend. And then we have what you might refer to as a sort of modernized typing pool. We have a centralized document production service that runs 24 hours a day in London, New York, and Bangalore, where they can send their marked up, scanned documents off and have that typed up. So that's something that probably is quite peculiar to law firms, I think. Versioning is very important to us. So it'd be interesting, actually, to see a show of hands. Who in the audience who's using SharePoint to control documents has any document libraries where you have versioning turned on? Okay, quite a few. That's interesting. So we use in SharePoint major minor versioning by default, and we don't have enforced checkout to edit turned on. So shredded storage in SharePoint 2013 is something that's quite a lot of interest to us because we generate an awful lot of document versions. We also have some pretty complex documents in terms of the way we use styles and numbering within Word, because lawyers like to be able to indent their numbering to about 8 levels deep, and we push Word to the limits. And that means that we have some third-party tools that plug into Word that allow people to manage their numbering, and it's very easy to get your Word document in a state where the numbering restarts in the wrong place or all the numbers go to 1 all the way through it. That means that when people are creating new documents, they don't start from within SharePoint, typically in their document library, and go in the ribbon new document, they'll start from Word, because we have quite a complex and integrated templating system in Word, that has all the stars and everything else in it. And one other thing, and this is something else that would be interesting to know. How many people use the document ID feature in SharePoint? How many find it works well for you? Okay. Document ID is pretty key for us. And I think it's a historic thing, really, that within the footer of all our Word documents that we print out, we include the document ID as a unique reference and the version number. And that's really important so that you know that the document you're referring to is the same as the person on the other side of the conference table or the person on the other end of the phone is referring to. And if anyone's interested, I can talk a bit more about the challenges around that. But yep, that's the reality of life in a law firm. So how do we get to where we are with SharePoint today? About 5 years ago, our CIO restated our IT strategy. And it was predicated on the fact that CC is a law firm, not an IT company. And IT is an enabler. It's not our core business. And it was becoming costly and or extremely costly and very complex to manage what we have. And we effectively, at that point, had a data center in every single one of our offices. So every office had local infrastructure, had local exchange servers, local document management servers. That means you've got to employ people to run those things, and it's very complex, very expensive. So part one was to collapse our data centers back into four key hubs, and that's key to our SharePoint strategy. So we now have SharePoint farms in Europe, and we have one in New York, and we have one in Hong Kong. And each of those farms has a redundant local disaster recovery site as well. We also looked to reduce complexity, cost, and rigidity on the desktop. So we looked at the number of applications that we had deployed. We looked particularly at the number of add-ins that we had in Outlook and Word, because that was a major blocker to us and one of the reasons why we were still in 2006 running Word 2000. We couldn't upgrade. So we stripped out as much of that as we could, and we wanted to adopt an industry standard, industry strength solution. And the timing was right for us in the beginning of 2009, I guess, when the Office 2010 technical adoption program kicked off for us to start looking at SharePoint 2010. We'd already started in the 2007 timeframe to build a relationship with MCS, Microsoft Services in the UK, and with the product group when we moved to Word 2007. That was a big shift for us because one of the things that we rely on, or our lawyers rely on, is document comparison, comparing versions of things. And there's a huge market out there, or I say huge market, there are half a dozen competing products of third-party comparison add-ins and engines. And in 2007, we were the first big law firm, possibly even still the only one, to throw out the third-party comparison tool that we were using and move to using native Word Compare. And that was part of building our relationship with the product group. We actually got some technical changes made to Word Compare and to the engine and some things fixed that were bugs that no one else really cared about. So that was a good experience, and that was something we carried through into 2010 in terms of working with them. We have a stated aim to move to the cloud. Where possible, we want to consume software as a service. We haven't done that yet with SharePoint. I'll talk a bit more about that, about why. And we also want to try and deliver a more consistent user experience globally. We have, as I said, 35 offices. Some are quite big, some are 25, 30 people, sitting on the end of high latency, fairly low bandwidth network connections. It's always been a challenge to try and deliver the same experience to those guys working in those offices as it is in London, to our lawyers working in London, for example. But just because it's a small office, just because they're sat somewhere that doesn't have great connectivity, doesn't mean we can treat them effectively as second-class users. It's our aim to try and deliver a more consistent experience worldwide. And we've made some strides in that with SharePoint, although arguably by taking their local infrastructure away, in some cases we've made things worse as well. I'll talk a bit more about that after the demo as well. So the timing was right in about 2009 for us to start looking at DM. The legacy system that we had was coming towards the end of its useful life. even if we'd stuck with the same vendor that we had, we were going to have to make a fairly major change. And looking around at all the options and what aligned best with our strategy, we'd been looking at SharePoint for a number of years. It seemed to make sense to have a really good look at 2010. And we engaged with MCS, we engaged with the product group to start a piece of work, starting with an envisioning phase for SharePoint, looking at SharePoint 2010 for document management. I think by that point, SharePoint had sort of reached a tipping point where there was enough experience out there. There were some major improvements in 2010 in terms of scalability that gave us confidence that we could store or manage the number of sites that we needed to, deal with the number of documents that we had, and run it as a true enterprise service, because lawyers don't tolerate downtime very well. And in terms of our long-term strategy for enterprise content management, for knowledge management, intranet, it seemed to be the best fit. And it was the only product out there that really at the time had anything like a coherent cloud story with Office 365. So that's where we ended up. So we started with an envisioning phase. We built out a bunch of personas and use cases around what lawyers do, what our document production units do, how our secretaries work, how our business services people work. And we came up with a list of things that it'd be really great if you could do them with SharePoint, such as search for a site when saving a document, rather than having to go into the browser, navigate to the site that you're looking for, copy a URL, trim a bit off the end, go back into Word, paste it into the CFD to get to the right place. Comparison, I've already said, is really key to what we do. So wouldn't it be great if there was a slightly slicker comparison story? Wouldn't it be good if you could attach a document or a version of a document to an email without having to download it to your desktop first? That's quite key for us. And wouldn't it be good if you had a richer, more actionable set of search results? And out of that, and our engagement with Microsoft Services in the UK, came the concept of something called DMA, which is the set of document management accelerators designed to augment SharePoint and Office client functionality, make it easier to use. We have a habit of saying to fill the gaps in SharePoint. People don't like it when I say gaps. That's what they are, really, I think. And Alex is going to show you this stuff in a minute. We think that a lot of what we built is applicable not just to Clifford Chance, but to a broad range of SharePoint users. Some of them are starting to appear or have appeared in 2013 as part of core product. Some of them haven't yet. We continue to lobby for them, and we'll talk a bit more about that in a second as well. And without further ado, I shall hand over to Alex, who will actually show you what we built, which now looks, of course, really old-fashioned and 2010-y.
Yes, it looks 2010 called, and I think they want their master page back. It's a little bit dated, but there's a reason for that, and the reason is that because that's where Clifford Chance are on their journey, and the conversations we've had in recent months is about what makes sense to port to the new app model, what can we retire because it's been replaced by out-of-the-box functionality, and what do we need to investigate more time into finding new features? What can we hopefully have a discussion with the product group around Wave 16 and beyond? So this is where we are. So this is a local VM. So I'll caveat it now that it's running with a whole 4 gigabytes of RAM. And I will add that Microsoft Services do not recommend running with 4 gigabytes of RAM. So hang on and bear with us on the performance. So we're starting with the My Site. And we've added 2 web parts here to aggregate content from across the entire farm. Charlie joked about the word gap because, you know, we, as I said, we have to be careful between being honest and realistic. But quite simply, there was a need. There was a user story behind users, as was said in the keynote, knowing where all their content is across the farm, regardless of site locations or different subsites. They wanted it in one place. So my recent documents, there's a lot of logic behind this. And what it's doing is it's keeping track of all activity that user does, regardless of site collection or site. So any sort of update to metadata or item creation or item modified will put this document to the top of the list. So clearly, from a technical perspective, that's a very interesting problem because you need to think about scaling, and in terms of that, lawyers messy desk. We need to work out how far we can push this before we start to hit certain limits. So if you want to talk later about the technicalities, we can do that as well. So we have my recent documents, which quite simply pulls out these documents. We've added some action items to allow just really simplifying a couple of clicks. So for example, if I want to action a document in more detail, I can then click through and it will highlight it for me in that document library, so I then get the full context menu within SharePoint. In addition to documents, sites as well. It seems baffling, really, to think that this doesn't actually exist in 2010, this all-up view that the user doesn't have to manage. So yes, admittedly, users can pluck sites out and keep a list of themselves, but this list is entirely automated. Now, for those that are in the keynote, you might think, oh, well, actually, this is fairly familiar now, and in 2013, we do have some almost, I'd say, maybe 50% of the way there with similar functionality. There are some subtleties behind the difference in the implementation, so it's not quite the same. So we can't kind of retire this model straight away and just get that for free in 2013. So this is the view from SharePoint. But as Charlie said, I think it's a little bit restrictive to expect users to be so stuck in the web browser when traditionally, in terms of making documents, you want to be in the application that makes that document. So what we've done is we've made quite a heavy customization, and I won't hide the fact that this is a full farm solution, full trusted code, so this is not cloud-enabled in any way. What we've done is customized the CFD, the common file dialog, and this page actually is just an iframe, so we can control any content that gets rendered in this page. But what we've done is we've made that exact same view on documents and sites from the Office client. So you can see this not only in Word, Excel, but actually any application at all that has that previous web dev view of SharePoint. So if I open up Notepad, for example, I'll get exactly the same thing, and it'll be scoped down to text files. So in addition, along the top, we have our recent sites as well. So when a user's creating a document, they don't have to work out in SharePoint where that document should belong. They can do it from that application without any other, as Charlie said, any switching between IE and Word. And finally, search. Again, it seems silly to think there isn't this rich capability to look into the window of SharePoint query results within Office Client. So what we've done here is added like a mini search center. We've even got things like managed properties, so we can get really specific here and look up a particular client and search for any term, and that goes off into SharePoint, and we get those search results there. So, as I said, quite a reasonably heavy customization to deploy. I think if the question we're asking ourselves at the moment is, well, what does this look like in 2013? You know, how can we port this over in a way that would work in the cloud, and would it be portable and have more of an upgrade path than this does? So we've looked at what was called codename Agave, or Apps for Office. You might have seen a couple of sessions where you've seen panes on the right of Office Client. So I think that may be a natural candidate for surfacing some of this information, and that also works in Office Web Apps. So we're exploring that rather than something maybe quite as heavy-handed as this. But in terms of business users, it means they can stay in the Office Client and have all this SharePoint functionality without opening up IE. So I think they've really benefited from that. So let's switch back to SharePoint. So I've got a couple of Matter sites, or as Charlie pointed out, project sites, really. We've got, you'll recognize these standard web parts here, the content query filtering parts. So they'll filter on documents, surface them up to the top of the site. We've got the separate section for key documents. That's just documents that have been marked. So that's fairly standard. So what isn't standard are these icons here. So we have an attachment icon and a related document icon. So this is a capability we've added. So if I switch to the document library, you'll see we've got some extra items on the ribbon. So we have related documents and we have attachments. So I can look in here and look at the related documents associated with this. The underlying structure is all in SharePoint, and we have a hidden list that keeps track of what's related to what. So search picks it up. It's quite neat. This is something you could, I think, quite, I say easily, you could knock this up in the app model, I think, using the client-side object model and the APIs available. That could be ported over quite easily, I think. And the same is true for attachments. So one of the common use cases was around printing stuff and scanning documents and then wanting to attach that commented document to the original document. And that's what this functionality allows. So that's related and attached documents. So, again, another, shall we say, gap, or I'm trying to think of synonyms that are slightly less, less harsh. Another challenge that we wanted to explore was around copying and moving documents. And I'm sure if I say copy, move, we all think of Explorer View and drag and drop. We think of we can do things with send to document libraries. And yet, for Clifford Chance's quite heavy use of versioning, and also moving things around site collections, I think we soon discovered that that wouldn't really cut the mustard. So we've added a capability for copy and move, which allows me to select multiple documents. And then the familiar common file dialog appears here. And I can pick my target site. And then here, we have an option for copying or move. Now, there are, some subtle differences behind this. And the whole scenario for copying is around document reuse. Because I think we all know in our heart of hearts that when people go to make new content, 9 times out of 10, we repurpose existing documents. It's quite rare, I think, in the customers that I've visited to have a really mature system around going file new and starting from scratch. I mean, we're all maybe slightly lazy, and we'll look for something that's similar and reuse, and then, I guess, in legal sense, change
it's
the customer name.
It's not best practice, and we'd never charge a client again for a document that we'd written for someone else.
Exactly. So putting that concern aside, so the copy functionality, what that does that's different from a normal copy is, first of all, it will operate completely across site collections, which is rare for SharePoint because of the underlying way SharePoint stores content. That's a technically reasonably complex problem to address. But also, it takes the most recent version and then promotes that to be 0.1 in the new document library. So really, if I find something similar that's had a series of 23 versions, I can take the most recent version and then start from scratch. So move is really kind of what it says on the tin, but moving takes the entire version history with me. And you'll find if you've ever tried to use Explorer View with version history that the end result is not great. So this, again, this meets that requirement to move the entire version history across. And that answers the problem of maybe something being misfiled and it can be moved across site collections in its entirety. So, and also, we get the ability to do multiple documents at once, and I can just trigger these off. And you see, we've got some various kind of helper messages here around permissions. The permissions model in 2010 was vastly improved from 2007. But at the same time, we've put these helper warnings up here to talk about permissions and alert users and to when permissions might change. So, that is copy move.
Sorry, Alex, there's a question.
Ah. Yes. So, great question. So, for move, document ID will be preserved across. So, that will be the same. As Charlie said, there are some nuances with document ID that are not by design, shall we say? No. And for copy, as you might expect, a fresh document ID is created. So that is the copy and move scenario. So, let's look now into... Let's do Outlook. So, there was a great session yesterday around the new sharing documents in 2013, and obviously the guidance we as a company have around not attaching documents. And internally, the fastest way to wind up someone internally in Microsoft is to send them a massive attachment and then do versioning and then send it back. Because in our heart of hearts, we love to think that SharePoint it lives in the cloud. That's the master version. We don't want to fill up our Exchange mailboxes with documents. However, in reality, I think for Clifford's and probably for a fair few other companies, and attaching documents into an email is a great way to preserve that document at that time. You can absolutely guarantee you know what that document was. You can guarantee that you can look on that date, that email was sent out, you know exactly what was sent. And also, really, in terms of getting around firewall, extranet type considerations, it's a very easy way to get things out to other people. So admittedly, from a corporate perspective, our steer is going more towards not putting it in emails and around sharing. But I think for some customers, there's still a strong need to attach into emails. So again, we've added a customization to Outlook to make that really straightforward and to add some extra functionality. So if you ever wanted to pluck a version from further down the version tree, you'll know that that's non-trivial, which is technical speak for quite tricky, really. You know that you need to sort of pluck that out in advance, save it locally, and it's not a great system. So what this will do is give us more control over picking those versions, and we can do it all from this interface. Also, I can pick attachments that are associated with a document and make it very easy to pull them down into the email. But the main thing this does, in addition to just the standard picking of files, is this area at the bottom around copying link. So I'll just show you. So if I picked a couple here, and what we do here is we allow that. And what we've done, we pull this document down from SharePoint, we put them in as an RCF email, which is why they're embedded in inline, which again is a Clifford Chance thing, I believe, the idea of placing attachments in certain places in emails. You see, I've learned a lot working with Clifford Chance. But what also we've done is we've done some link normalization. So these documents have come out of SharePoint, and regardless of the file name they had in SharePoint, we've put the document ID in there and the version, and we've normalized it, we've made a nice friendly link, we haven't got this long underscore layouts redirect type, you know, SharePoint link. So it's made it very easy to pull stuff out of SharePoint and into Outlook. So again, I guess the question that some of you might be thinking is, well, what happens in 2013? How can this work? So again, I think App for Office is an ideal candidate for this. Really, all we're using is web services that are exposed. So even in Office 365, I think you could do this quite successfully and pull it down, because the hard work is being done on the client. So really, it's quite easy, and you don't really need something quite heavy on the server side. So I think an App for Office is ideal. The first person to make these customizations and put them in the Office marketplace could make a small fortune. So we should probably get some sort of patent on it. But I think there's a strong need, and I can see that happening. So that's attachment within Outlook. So Charlie talked about comparisons quite a lot. So we've again added a customization into Word to allow an organization to define comparison settings that are deployed through group policy, and they're consistent, so that everyone in that enterprise organization knows that they are comparing with the same settings. So if I deviate from the recommended settings, this warning will go to red and remind me and allow me to set it back to the organization settings. But we've supplemented the comparison dialogue and allowed, again, more logic around picking documents to make it easy to pluck things out, because one of the common scenarios of comparing documents is comparing versions, because you want to see what's changed. If a document's gone off to a client and they've changed it, you've now got a new version. So that's really quite common, and yet in the old scenario, you'd be plucking out those versions individually, saving them locally, getting them into Word. It's not an ideal scenario. So if I pick a document here and then pull this down into Word, it's always a little sluggish here. Some reason on the comparison, but again, this is the 4 gigabyte virtual machine straining away. So that comes out of SharePoint. We automatically look up the metadata, so we've got the document ID in there, so we know what we're looking at. And also, we've made a guess here that I picked the latest version of that document, and we're suggesting you want to compare it with the last version, which kind of makes sense and is a logical thing to do. And then I can hit compare, and Word will do its standard thing once we pull down this document, and we get the standard Word type comparison. And as Charlie said, there is a very strong positive message around the demands that Clifford Chance had, and a lot of the requests that went up to the product group made it into Word 2007. So we all benefited from some of those conversations, I hope, around comparison. So that is comparison in Word. So we can dive into this later if we need to. But for now, I will pass back to Charlie.
Thank you. So, what did we learn from doing all that on 2010? I should say where we are, really, I guess. We have about half of Clifford Chance rolled out onto SharePoint 2010 and doing their day jobs on it. So that's London and most of Europe. The rest of Europe will be done very shortly, and we're about to start in the Americas and Hong Kong. It's nothing really to do with technical difficulties, the reasons we've taken so long to roll people out. It just takes a long time in an organization like ours to make big changes like this, so we are progressing. We wanted to deliver this initially on Office 365, but we couldn't meet the functional requirements without running full trust code. So we made a conscious decision quite early on that, okay, we abandon our 365 ambition, which I think would have been thwarted anyway by the risk and compliance issues surrounding it. But as Alex said, it is a full trust solution. It's not at all cloud friendly today. We wanted to deliver one global SharePoint farm. However, when you're pushing large documents around, a lot of the documents that you're migrating from your legacy system into SharePoint are in the old binary Office formats and are therefore bigger than they would be otherwise, there are significant challenges when you have geographically distributed offices on the end of high latency, low bandwidth links. So we had to settle on three farms to address some of the performance concerns. Geographic distribution of SharePoint is tricky, and it's something that you need to plan carefully for. I think that's all I'll say about that. Information architecture is important. We thought long and hard about whether we should adopt a very flat structure for our matters, or whether we should go for something that was a lot more hierarchical and modeled the business. We took a decision to go very flat, so we actually have a site collection per matter. So for every matter, we create a site collection. We did that because we wanted, or we thought in the future, that we would end up using some sort of metadata-based navigation to provide alternative views, and I think that decision has been vindicated in terms of what's appeared in 2013. And although my colleague Randy, who's sitting in the audience, may disagree, I think we can manage the number of site collections that we've got just about with out-of-the-box tools and PowerShell. Disaster recovery and business continuity is a challenge. Especially we're running Fast 2010 for search. We have to run a full crawl if we fail over to our DR centers today because of the way we have things set up. Again, I think that's something that hopefully will improve in 2013. And my final point around managing SharePoint over time is that it's very easy to get caught up in the momentum of a project and to want to get the system out there and in front of people without necessarily having done all the work that you should have done to make sure that you can support and run the system from day one. And I think that's an easy trap to fall into. You need to proactively manage SharePoint. I'm sure you guys have had similar experiences. You need to be monitoring the health of your farm. You need to be running all the checks on a daily, weekly, monthly basis to keep things running smoothly. We took a decision that we weren't going to go live with any third-party tools, so all we have is Central Admin and PowerShell. That makes life more challenging as well. I think it's, in retrospect, we'd have budgeted for some additional tooling to make our operators' lives easier. But it's been a largely positive experience. We have half the firm doing document management, which is core to our business, on SharePoint 2010. We're about to start rolling out the remaining half of the firm. We are about to start bringing across, so as part of our migration, we've not brought across all content from our legacy system into SharePoint. We were able to get agreement from the business that we would take quite a strict view, look at what people had touched in the last year and bring that across, and the rest of it is still sitting in the legacy system. We're about to start bringing the rest of it across into SharePoint so that we can realize some savings and actually switch off the old document management system. So it's a pretty good story. We've also, as Alex said, been involved in the SharePoint 2013 Technical Adoption Program and RDP program. Our primary interest there was looking at site mailboxes in Exchange 2013, which is not something I'm going to spend any time talking about, but email management for us is to a large extent a solved problem. We have a Matter email filing system that we built a number of years ago, but that is coming towards the end of its life from a technical point of view. We need to make some revisions, so site mailboxes is something that's of great interest to us and something that we're likely to start moving towards and adopting in the near future. So that means we want to take all our existing 2010 stuff and we want to upgrade it to 2013. And that means we've got to look at evolving DMA. We've got to look at what we no longer need because it's in core product, and we've got to look at how we take that full trust code and how we rebuild it, hopefully in more cloud app and office app friendly ways to make it more portable, make it more supportable, make it a bit more lightweight. One of the challenges we have at the moment is around deployment for that stuff is quite complex across three farms and across all our pre-production farms, and it's hopefully we can make that easier going forwards. And we have a continued engagement with Microsoft, with the product group, as they move into Wave 16 planning, which I'm sure you won't be surprised here has already started. As soon as Office 2013 RTM'd, Microsoft start thinking about the next version. Which leads me neatly on to engaging with Microsoft and a bit of a call to arms.
Yes. So, in fact, before we get to this slide, I did want to actually make almost a formal apology, because I assume in this room there are some legal people, and there was a bit of a clangor in the keynote that I think it was Richard made. Charlie and I sat down, we were at the back, 5 minutes in, and then Richard was doing his demo, and he made some reference to who'd want to put money in lawyers' back pockets, eh? And I heard that and just face-palmed and looked at Charlie and said, I apologize formally on behalf of Microsoft for that. And Charlie said, know your audience. So the conference got off to a flying start on Monday. But I'm sure he didn't mean it. You know, it was all in jest, I hope, anyway. So engaging with Microsoft. Yes, so we've been very lucky. And this has definitely been, I was going to say match made in heaven. That's a little bit schmaltzy. But we've both benefited from this engagement, this partnership. And as I said, some of the feedback that we've got from Clifford Chance has made it into the product, which then we all benefit from. Because it's as ever with engaging with different teams in Microsoft, it's about getting that information in the right format and getting a collected view and trying to get that business weight behind it. Because if it's without that joined up view, it can be, I think, quite hard for the product group to know where the pain is and really what these scenarios are that they didn't really maybe think of in Redmond. So, yes. Speak to your Microsoft Account Manager if you have one. There are two programs that Clifford Chance have been involved in. The Technical Adoption Program we've referred to is the first one, and that happens traditionally early in the dev cycle, and that is about feedback for engineering. So by working through, I nearly said bugs. I think we mean known issues and other such behavior. We can work on that early enough and get that into new builds of the product. And then we deploy those in a lab environment, and we can see that change happening. And it's I don't know about if anyone else has been involved in these programs, but seeing the evolution of the product is actually immensely satisfying. And getting new builds every week or so and installing those it really does, I think, give you a bit of an insight into how the product comes together and how we get to the final state. So the technical adoption program comes first, and then we move to the rapid deployment program, which is actually about generating marketing materials. It's about getting case studies together, and of course that's why Charlie and I are here today. So that happens quite late, so that's not necessarily about getting changes into the product, but it's still a very worthwhile exercise. And ultimately, you get your hands on binaries and bits and guidance quite early. But as Charlie added, it is very much a two-way process, and it's not just about, you know, grabbing an early build of the product and then installing it and then sort of doing a runner. There's a lot of time involved on both sides. So we have resources from MCS, Microsoft Consulting Services, that spend time with the customer. And also we rely on resources on the customer side to work together. In addition, there's things like hardware for lab environments. And so it is, again, non-trivial and worth considering. And yes, so Office Wave 16 has started, planning started now. 2013 is just but a memory, and 16 is here. So that nomination process is starting. So if you want to talk about getting involved and that, how that process works, I think there's a booth actually in the exhibit hall, and I can connect you with the right people as well. So we have a plug here for what is called the ECM Special Interest Group, which sounds very adult. I'm assured it's totally above board, and it's genuinely about ECM. My colleague, Peter Dean, in Microsoft Services UK, he runs this cross-industry group, especially on ECM, about getting that collective message together. So when there is pain amongst a lot of customers around versioning, around comparisons, we can get that voice together, and we can say, look, we have 20 customers here all wanting to do the same thing. We think this needs more investment. So there is his email there if you're interested in that. So my details are there. I'm Alex Du at Microsoft.com. So if we go to the next slide, of course, there's the plug here for feedback, of course, which we really genuinely appreciate. And if this type of session is useful, if we got the balance right between honest and being brutal at the same time, and if you'd like this sort of content or less of it, so feedback through the tool or through email to me or Twitter or anything is very much appreciated. So we've left, hopefully, plenty of time to do some well, as I said, lively Q&A. So let's go for it. Sir.
Okay, good questions.
Was it the first? I can take the second.
Yeah, yep. So the first question was, this gentleman also works for a law firm, and they've looked at SharePoint for a DMS, and they've walked away from it every time because of a question around ethical walls. So this is barriers between matters. So one guy works for Coke, and he can't see anything that relates to Pepsi, for example. And SharePoint not having deny security. And that's true, it doesn't. How do we deal with it? We use a third-party product called Wall Builder from Intapp. And we work around it with policy, basically. I'm guessing if you're from the US, it's probably a slightly stricter requirement for you than it is for us in some of our locations and offices. Does that answer your question?
And the second part then about matter details, what I will show you, because it will be much more interesting. So the question was around matter details and how is that, where is that stored, at what level in SharePoint, and also I imagine about how that gets mapped to documents as well. So I didn't show it because it's metadata, and you know metadata is fun, but it's not that fun. So if we look at the site collection level, as we said, every matter is a site collection, and we have a list here, matter details. This list is populated from another system in Clifford Chance that we connect with to as part of the provisioning engine. So these are matter-centric details, and then we have event handlers on the document libraries to populate the documents with that information as they come in. So it's about making it very easy for the lawyers to have document that's classified and tagged, so search is useful and relevant, but making it so easy, because there's nothing worse than that massive metadata pop-up with about 10 required fields, because you end up with NA in every field. So we've got event handlers to handle that mapping.
We also run a metadata stripping tool in Outlook, so when you attach anything to an email, we strip all the document properties out of it when it goes out in the organization as well. But internally, everything's tagged up. So we had a compulsory one-hour training session that people had to go to, and for those people who didn't turn up, and that's a lot of our lawyers because they just won't go to training, we put our RT trainers on the floor as those departments were rolling out, and they would come and spend 10 or 15 minutes with people at their desks and work through it with them, and that's pretty much all we've done. So we... Sorry? Yes, I think so, yeah. I mean, we are quite careful that we make sure that we target specific users in each area and we give them extra training and we make them power users and the go-to person on that floor, effectively, as the system's rolling out, so people know who they can go and talk to and ask questions of. So the question was, how did we persuade the business that they needed a document management system to begin with? That's an interesting one. So I joined Clifford Chance as a fresh-faced graduate in 1997. I used to look like Alex then.
I'll take it. I get used to it.
And we had a document management system then. So it's fairly ingrained. We've always... I think when I joined, we just finished rolling out Windows 95 Office 97, and we had a document management system from OpenText in place at that point, and I think they had moved from file shares into. So it's been fairly ingrained in the culture for quite a long time. I don't know if that helps to answer your question, but that's how. Now, and I don't know whether culturally we're different from other organizations, but we're one of the few organizations I know who've managed to enforce compulsory email filing, for example. So we have, when you create a new email in Outlook, before you hit send, we pop a box up and we force you to tag it, and you can't send the email without doing that. And not many other places that I'm aware of that have actually managed to achieve that without their users picking their machines up and throwing them out the window. And that was literally 2 weeks of pain while people complained about it, and then they get used to it and carry on. Received emails, so you can read them in the preview pane without having to do anything with them, but as soon as you open that message, before you can close it again, or as soon as you hit reply or forward, we force you to tag it.
I mean, email filing is an interesting one, and as Charlie said, so we mentioned site mailboxes very briefly, and that's a massive topic. So we'll be at RC Experts this evening, and if anyone wants to talk about site mailboxes and filing, I know a couple of people have a bit of an appetite for that, then we'd be happy to, because that hopefully is the vision for Clifford Chance going forward on a fairly epic scale.
So we've even built a prototype compulsory filing client that drops stuff into site mailboxes.
Sorry.
That's a very good question. So firstly, our workforce is not terribly mobile. We don't have an awful lot of laptop users. Now, we do, of course, have some mobile users, and we prevail on them to manage their content effectively, if that makes any sense. So in terms of taking documents from SharePoint offline, people can check them out to local drafts, work on them, check them back in when they're back online. So that the CFD customizations that we've done don't affect any of that. In terms of email filing, there is a bit of a hole. Lawyers still like BlackBerrys. We have a lot of BlackBerry users. We also have email integration on iPhones and other devices, there is a hole currently, so you can send an email from a mobile device without having to tag it today. But unless if you're replying to an existing email in a conversation that's already been tagged, it will inherit that tag. It's only brand new emails, effectively, that fall into that loophole.
And what happens to the customization
if you're offline? So, if you're offline. So yeah. It's not available, effectively,
So that customization is totally server-side. It's all rendered there. So without any network connection, it's, Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, over there.
Matter sites.
Yep. Did you consider using the collections like the document center to have all the documents stored in one place? And if you did not, why didn't you consider collisions and all that?
That's a very good question. So, yes, we did look at document center and we thought about aggregating things together into bigger document libraries. But our logical unit, if you like, is the matter, and it just made sense for us to keep things scoped at a matter level and to scope a matter at site collection level.
Are you doing records management in place?
So we are, that's an interesting one. No, not at the moment, no. The question is, where do we store our emails? Today, no, we don't store them in SharePoint. We have another system that's built on some non-Microsoft technology from another big database company.
But yeah, it rhymes with Foracle. So.
Yeah.
Subtle, real subtle.
They're inside SQL. The question was, are we using remote blob storage for SQL? No, we're not. Everything's inside SQL today. However, it may be something that we're looking, that we look to move to.
So the question was around where are the attachments stored. So again, I can do a very quick show and tell. So again, I mean, we try not to reinvent the wheel and invent some complex data structure that makes no sense. So there is a document library called attachments, and there's automatically generated folders by document ID showing the parent. And then we actually use a link in SharePoint to store related documents. So we're not duplicating content if there's multiple related documents to the same document. And document sets, so that's an interesting one.
We did look at document sets. We decided not to use them for matter documents, for working documents. We are using document sets for our know-how collection, for example, where we effectively have a library card, which is the document set homepage that gives you all the metadata and summary information, and then the number of attachments, which are the documents within the document set folder, effectively, that constitute that know-how item. Yes, sir. So questions around extranets. Are we exposing SharePoint externally and sharing documents with our clients that way? And the answer is we tend to use third-party services for that. We built, way back in 2000, a system called Clifford Chance Connect, designed to do exactly that, and so did a bunch of other law firms. And we found that it was never terribly heavily used. And I think the reason for that is that by the time at which we get involved in a lot of deals, the other parties, the bank or whoever else is involved, has already set up an extranet site in Intralinx or Merrill Docs or one of the other third-party sites that exists. So we are not currently offering that ourselves. We use third-party services to deliver that. So the question is around what we call the round tripping of documents. So I send a document out to a client, they make some edits to it and send it back to me. How do I get that back into the document management system as a new version of an existing document, effectively? Do you want to show that? Sorry, we may not have any content. The simple answer is you can right-click on the document attached to the email, do a save as, and then through the CFD integration, find the original document. And because we don't have enforced checkout to edit, and this is the key, because we don't have enforced checkout to edit turned on, it's easy then to save the document as a new version of an existing one. You get the slightly confusing pop-up from Office that says you're about to replace the existing content, but it actually saves it as a new version. If you've got enforced checkout to edit turned on, it's trickier because you have to check the parent document out, effectively, before you can save the new version of it. Now, there is a bit of customization or a feature within the CFD customization that actually pops up a link in the right-hand column that allows you to check it out. The problem is, once you've saved the new version, you have to go back into the browser to check it back in. And one of the main reasons why we don't enforce checkout to edit, because in that scenario, we ended up with a lot of documents left checked out when they shouldn't have been. If the document name has been changed by the external party, it relies on people recognizing that and either opening it in Word and doing a save as and picking the original document, or, yeah, it relies on human intervention.
How do you know what the doc ID is when it comes back, stripping the metadata out as it's going out there, and then it comes back?
So we don't strip footers, so dock ID is in the footer. And we also, part of the process of attaching it to the email, actually changes the file name from SharePoint and includes the dock ID in the file name. So as long as the client hasn't renamed the document, then you've got the dock ID there as well. Yeah, so you have the option. You have the checkbox at the bottom that say attach link, attach copy, and copy actually attaches the document to the email.
And you still put that link in there?
Or yeah, you can pick and choose. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so that's a customization to Outlook.
So that's an interesting one.
On the client.
Have you got it in there?
Yep.
So if you just pop the dialog up. Yeah, so you've got the options down at the bottom here for attach a copy or attach a link. When we built this, there is a registry key behind the scenes because we assumed we'd end up picking one or the other, but we could never agree what the right option was, so we actually put both in and then rely on the user to remove the one they don't want from the body of the message. That seems to work best. So if you actually look at the file name of that, and if you do a right click and save as, then you've actually got the doc ID in there and the version in there as well. What do we do for search? We use FAST for SharePoint 2010. So we have three farms. The only one that's really doing anything at the moment is a European one, which has got 3,500 users on it. Do you know off the top of your head, Randy, how many documents have we got in there today? 4 million items, something like that. So, sorry, I can't hear you. 4 million documents, thank you. So it's not massive today. But search performance is fine, and performance generally is okay. The biggest challenge we had initially was actually around the custom web parts on the My Site page. Some improvements have been made there in later versions of the code, and that's addressed that one. The other problem we have today is, particularly in the Outlook integration, when you pop up, when you click attach to email, do it again. Because we're returning a list of potentially 30 documents and an awful lot of subversions and attachments, and that's quite a lot of data coming across the wire, and the JavaScript performance in that dialogue isn't great either. So we have a new version of that coming, which will reduce the number of items you see in one go and not actually return all the versions until you actually say, show me the versions, please, to speed that up. So the question was, are our teams starting to embrace custom lists within SharePoint? To do what sort of thing do you have in mind? Right, that's interesting. No, I haven't seen that happening, really. I've had some interesting requests from a few partners around wanting to start blogging and doing other things, commenting around documents and establishing communities of interest and starting to use some of the social features more. But I haven't seen many requests coming through of people wanting to add things into add features into Matter sites as yet. No, not really seeing that demand, to be honest. I mean, we are doing other things with SharePoint, like we have a business intelligence. We have another SharePoint file specifically for business intelligence, and we're starting to look at dashboarding and what KPIs we put in front of partners and senior lawyers in terms of time and billing information, outstanding timesheets for those people who have a supervisory role, what's going on in their practice area, that sort of stuff. But that's a work in progress. A lot of that stuff's already available within our practice management system, but it's just a bit of a pain to get to it, and we'd like to surface that within SharePoint and ultimately have it as part of the Matter site. We have it's a hybrid of it's fairly custom and specific to Clifford Chance, to be honest. Yes. Do we have any support for other languages was the question. The answer is all the SharePoint UI and everything else is all provided in English. The DMA components are only in English. But obviously we support storing content as SharePoint out of the box in pretty much any language. And search as well is of course, multilingual.
And heavy keyboard shortcuts as well. I know that's quite...
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So yeah, all the client-side stuff is, and particularly the Outlook pieces, all support keyboard shortcuts. One, from an accessibility point of view, and two, because we still have a large number of secretaries in particular who are proper touch typists and really don't like taking their hands off the keyboard to use a mouse. And then, let's go over there, sorry. Yes, so we have a general strategy, which is where possible, we should be looking to adopt software as a service solutions. Do I think that's going to happen in the near future for SharePoint and document management? The answer, honestly, is no, for the very reasons that you say. There are still too many both real issues in terms of legislation and particularly in terms of some of the places that we operate in, for example, Luxembourg, where we can't, where they have a real reticence to actually physically taking the data outside of the jurisdiction. And secondly, a general perception that if we put stuff in Office 365, we're giving our data to Microsoft. That mindset still exists, and I think that's something that's going to take some time to overcome. But other systems we are looking at, we are considering, for example, moving our HR system to a cloud-based provider. We've have a system we've been looking at recently for allocating work to lawyers and associates, and we've looked at a cloud-based service for that. So for those sorts of things where there's not sensitive data being held, we're definitely moving in that direction. I suspect we'll do it for some mailboxes as well. Certainly the 3,000 business services users that we have, I see very little reason why my mailbox, for example, couldn't go into 365, and I suspect it will. Lawyers, again, a bit more contentious. We'll see what happens there. Yes? So the question was, are we applying any retention policies to content, and what are our processes around legal holds? That's quite an interesting one. So Alex and I have spent some time speccing out how we are going to deal with document archiving, and it's something that we are going to develop. How much more do you want to say?
Yeah,
about
so
that?
I think so. We have spent some time discussing this, and the overriding vision is a vanilla SharePoint 2013 farm that's kept with no customizations whatsoever, and that with that premise means a compromise in user experience, as we've seen, and then some custom logic to handle the retention moving between it. So the end state being a cloud enabled farm. That could potentially be a candidate for 365 or something else in the future. But we do need some logic to handle matters and get the timing right and take things as atomic units together.
So the key to that for us, the key to retention for us, is actually tracking the life cycle of the matter. And when the matter closes, picking that up as an atomic unit and moving it from our live SharePoint farm into an archive farm. That's what we plan to do. Legal holds is an interesting one. The answer is... we don't really do legal holds today. I know it sounds weird, but I think it's not something that UK law firms do, weirdly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So the question was, we have our meta details list. Is that just used to populate metadata down to the document level? Is it also used to drive membership for the site collection? So this meta details list and the whole site creation process in our implementation of DMA is fully automated. So we have a SharePoint timer job that goes and calls a web service and says, practice management system, tell us what you've got that's new, and then we automatically create the sites, and that's what populates this list. It's only used at the moment for metadata purposes. It's not used for driving membership. Yeah, that metadata changes in our practice management system. That flows through into SharePoint, yeah, and flows down to the document level. How do we... Okay, that's an interesting one. So we have two ways of doing that. One is we use a third-party product called WallBuilder. An associated product called Matter Team Manager that allows us to maintain ethical walls. And secondly, we have a default policy that non-sensitive matters are open to everyone, which I know shocks some American lawyers, but that's the way we do it. Are you, you're talking about what I would call standard forms and precedents as opposed to house style templates, right? Okay, so how do we manage our standard forms and precedents? So we have, currently that is sitting, those sit outside of SharePoint in a bespoke template management system that's being moved into SharePoint as we speak. So we have quite a complex process around how those are managed and versioned and curated and published. And then they are just published as... we only basically use one content type within the system at the moment that we call CC Legal Document, and that's so that we're not leveraging SharePoint features at the moment to manage those. Yep. Yep. Yes. So the question is, do we just store the metadata at a site collection level, or do we actually store it down at the document level as well? And the answer is we store it down at the document level as well.
Yep. So it's copied through to every document.
Also, it's copied through. It's not selected by the user?
No, it's seamless. So there's opportunities to override, but the default inheritance so flows from the matter level to all documents inside that matter.
Yes.
Yep, so I think there's one field in here that is, as you can see, not hooked up. but excluding the MMS errors, yes, so heavy term set usage, which is great for search and refiners and other goodness. So, one more.
So the question was, have we talked to Microsoft about metadata inheritance from the site level down to items within the site, I think? Yep. No. I mean, it's something that is a DMA customization, isn't it, in terms
it is,
of copying that
yeah.
metadata down to
yeah.
the document level. No, it's something we built, and it's not, yeah, it's a reasonable point, something we could consider. No, okay. Yes? The latter. So the question was, are we replicating Matter sites across data centers, or are we? Do they only live in one place? So behind the scenes, we have a mechanism for controlling which matters get created in which SharePoint farm. And effectively, the matter lives on the farm closest to the office that owns that matter. So Shanghai matters live on the Hong Kong farm. Frankfurt matters live on the London farm. And yes, you're right, but that means if people are working cross-office, they currently take the hit in terms of pulling that stuff across the WAN, which means we perpetuate an existing business process, which is if I'm a lawyer working in Shanghai and I'm working on a matter in London, I get someone to email the document to me. It's not great, but people have been doing it for years, and it works.
So I think we are bang on 1:30. So as I said, we're around this evening and absolutely happy to take questions by email or anything. So thank you very much.